right. Hey, welcome to Season 3, Episode 10, also known as Episode 82 of the Retro Game Club podcast. My name is Hugh, and joining me is someone frantically trying to sell our first episode as an NFT, Rob.
Oh, yeah. Who's going to get this? Who's this is our retirement. I got all my eggs in this basket.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I still don't understand what the point of them of those things are.
No one does. Absolutely no one does. The only people that understands are the people that sold them and made a ton of money before everyone realized it was a scam.
Yes.
But what's been going on?
What has been going on? I read this fun article this week. I put it in the off-topic category. Mm-hmm. Over on howtogeek.com, they have an article called the Top 10 Best Versions of Windows Ever. Mm-hmm. And I know you're thinking they're only up to Windows 10. Doesn't mean there's just 10. But of course, that's not even close to the full number of Windows versions. And I agree with the top three on their list. I don't agree with the full list, but I do agree with the top three. So I'm just going to mention those real quick and tell me if you agree with their top three picks. Mm-hmm. Number three, Windows 95. Number okay. two, Windows 2000. And number one, Windows 7.
All those are good versions. I agree they're all good versions. I mean, I'm a pretty big fan of Windows 10, specifically because I have Linux in Windows. Makes my life really easy, and it's pretty stable, but... Yeah, all of those are good. We were both confused why NT 4.0 was in there. It didn't feel like a consumer type thing.
Yeah, so my first programming job was almost entirely on Windows NT 4. Like, that was my development system. Mm-hmm. And Windows NT 4 is really not that different than, like, it's really like a more stable version of Windows 95. Mm-hmm. I actually liked it a lot. But, you know, most people, you know, didn't use it, I suppose, which is why it would be ranked a little bit lower. It's probably not great for running games. Definitely not good for running DOS games.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I had a one of the second computer I ever bought and built for myself was a dual 166 and a Pentium. And since I worked at a place that built and sold computers, I got to get wholesale. That's how I afforded that stuff at a young age. But NT4.0, I used because it supported dual processor. But then I learned almost no games ran on it.
Right. Right. Like Doom for Windows could run because they did something to wrap it so it would run on, you know, maybe it was DOS behind the scenes, but they did something where it was... fairly independent, because I remember being able to run that, like Doom for Windows 95 would run on it. Mm-hmm. But anything that was like a pure DOS game, like that would work pretty well on Windows 95 wouldn't work at all.
Yeah, it did not like that, yeah.
And I skipped Windows XP. I went Windows 2000 to Windows 7. I was not a fan of the user interface of Windows XP or some of the add-ons.
You definitely didn't like Vista, right?
did not like Vista, no.
No one did. No one did.
No, but when I don't have Windows PCs anymore, but when I did, I mostly used them for development. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my opinion's a little bit different. I wasn't doing a lot of gaming, so maybe I didn't care about the version so much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then as a side note, I mentioned giving away some free 5200 games. Someone responded. I have not mailed them yet. So if they're listening, hopefully they did not unsubscribe because they did not get free games. But if you're still listening, I'm probably not going to go to the post office. I'm probably going to go to the post office until I get a vaccine, to be pretty blunt. So I did some math. I looked at, the current rate of the county I live in, and, that's mid August is about when I'll be up. So you might not be getting them right away.
Oh, I mean, they waited, you know, three decades. What's a few more months?
What's a few more months? Now I was thinking of taking up smoking just so I could get to the head of the line.
Do they even like, do they make you light up a cigarette right there to prove it?
I think they should, yeah. like the old ironic punishment. They put you in the closet, don't let you out until you smoke a pack.
Exactly, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, they should, man. Absolutely. What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Let's see. I started Nier Automata. I probably pronounced that wrong. Have you played that one?
I have not.
It's pretty good. It definitely has a Final Fantasy type feel. It's an action RPG. I never played any of its prequels. Didn't know it had prequels until I started playing it. And I'm enjoying it. I like the futureness of it. So we'll see. We'll see if I get all the way through it. And I have a lot of games on my list to play right now. So we'll see. We'll see if I stick with this one. But I jumped on Amazon, had a 1-day sale for some PS5 games that were just like $23 for, two different games. So I got both of those games. That's like $50 off almost. But I don't have a PS5. But with my back catalog, I won't play these games until I'll have a PS5 by then, even if it's 2 years from now. But I'm convinced PS5s aren't real. I've been looking around. I don't think they actually exist.
Interesting. So like the people at Kotaku or whatever that review
PS5
games, they're just part of a conspiracy.
Total conspiracy. Yep. I do think it's funny though that starting this week on Newegg.com, it's a raffle to get a PS5. So you tell them if you want one, and then eventually you might hear from them that you won. You're part of the raffle.
But do you win the PS5, or do you just win the ability to buy the PS5?
You win the ability to buy the PS5.
Okay.
That's how bad the scalpers are now.
So I don't normally support capital punishment, but I am willing to make exceptions.
It's got to be part of, like now spam phone calls, robocalls are becoming illegal. I think this stuff should be illegal too.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be able to just write a bot to buy that stuff. But
Yeah, mob justice would be fine for that too.
Exactly. Yeah, I would be fine with it. But yeah, we have some news items, some throwaway news items here too.
Like the first one here. Toys R Us owners, whoever that may be, want to reopen stores before the end of 2021. Well, okay.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They're definitely not going to be in malls, and they're going to be a lot smaller. So we'll see what those are like. They also own Babies R Us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just heard something. I read some article where people aren't having enough kids. So Babies R Us seems like a bad business idea right now.
Yeah. And I guess that wouldn't make this wouldn't make sense to our Canadian listeners because they still have Toys R Us there, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yes.
Yeah. So I guess that's just America. On Gizmodo.com, they have a story about the new 8-bit dough SN30 Pro Plus. It's a mouthful, but it looks like a mix between a PS1 controller and I guess a Super Nintendo controller. Mm-hmm. But it looks the one that came out, 2 years ago now? But this one you could program with your phone, which is kind of cool, and do firmware updates and stuff straight from your phone. So that's a pretty cool idea. I like that one.
Yeah, I've bought a couple of their controllers, and I think they're very good quality.
Absolutely. Am I reading this right? Is this only $50? That's a pretty good price.
That's what they're saying, $50.
That's a pretty good price. Oh, and one thing I wanted to hit on this, if you scroll down in this article, there's something that I thought all modern controllers should have. And those buttons on the bottom of the controller, like where your ring finger would sit normally. That's where I think the trigger should be on all controllers. So you have your index fingers at the back, top back of the controller, and you already have your ring fingers at the bottom of the controller.
Like where the sensors are on the Vita, on the back of the Vita.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, or the not many people know this, but the Steam controller had the paddles back there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nobody knows that.
Nobody knows that. Why do I buy this stuff? But yeah, I thought that was a good move right there. All right. The best game released in 2020 is NES, a demake from 2008.
Yeah, this is about Pac-Man Championship. For NES?
Yes. Yeah. Which I have not played. Have you played it?
I have not, no.
No, I looked at some videos and it looked pretty neat, but it took me a while to find a video that was the correct version. I guess the second version of this is already out.
Okay. I'm assuming we talked about this.
We must have. So, yeah, is this... Yeah, it looks like you could download this ROM. So, yeah, I'll have to check that out. So, yeah, that's a modern game demade onto the NES. The first time I read the article, I was a bit confused. Do you need a new way to store your Super Famicom games?
No, but if I did, this is a neat idea.
Yeah, how do you describe this one?
It's essentially a binder that you can put. It's like a book, but like imagine if you you're sitting at the hotel and you took the Bible out, right? And you carved an NES hole in the pages, mm-hmm. like people would sometimes do with a gun, but this is for like Earthbound or something. It's like that, minus the Bible part.
Yeah, some nice artwork on it too. Simple artwork.
Yeah.
Pretty neat. They're $24 to $29 each, which...
Yeah, it's funny. I have one of these for the Atari 2600.
Really?
Yeah, but it's from, like, 1982 or whatever.
Nice.
Yeah, so, like, somebody made an Atari-branded kind of faux leather case exactly like this to put 2600 games.
Wow, cool.
And I think I just have like six total garbage games in it. I should be using it to put like my six rarest games in or something. But
yeah,
I have like Superman and maybe a Pac-Man and some other stuff in there. Nothing important in it.
Yeah, some Mousetrap.
Yeah.
Okay, what else do we have?
Cotton is getting a reboot.
Yeah, and that was released. So I was trying to find a story about this, but all I could find was a review. So this is, and it's a really good review. It gives a bit of history. So I figured it was newsworthy on NintendoLife.com. Yeah, it's a, I guess it pretty much just has new assets and a few quality of life updates for Cotton that was originally on the PC Engine. And now it's on the Switch. So it got pretty glowing reviews.
Mm-hmm. So this is not a port of the PC Engine version. This is the later X68 version.
Ah, that's why it looks so nice, too. Nice.
Let's see. New prototypes of Sonic Heroes have been found. I guess there's a bigger article about like a bunch of PlayStation 2 prototypes being found and dumped to the internets recently. I don't know if this is part of it.
This must be. Yeah, this was a debugging prototype. So it was pretty much feature complete, but had some debugging code and features in there.
Yeah, I own this game. I have no idea what you're supposed to be doing in it.
Yeah. This is a strange story here on Screen Rant. The head of Xbox, Phil Spencer, does not understand the Nintendo 64's controller.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's not alone.
Yeah, I mean...
Much, much better for digital control games than analog control games.
What do you mean?
I mean, games where you use the D-pad to move, it's a really great controller. Because I use it mostly for, like, emulators.
Mm-hmm.
Games with the analog stick, I don't know if people know how to hold it. Like, if you have really big hands, it's easy. You can just hold the outside grips. But most people, I guess, are trying to hold the middle part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, how do you hold a Nintendo 64 controller?
Yeah, I hold the middle part and the side, yeah.
By the sides? Like no. A normal person, okay.
No, I don't, no. I hold the middle part.
So, okay, hold on, I have a Nintendo 64
controller. Yeah, I'm looking. So, yeah, I hold it like that.
So you hold it like this?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I have tiny circus hands.
Oh, I see. But this is like, no one can see this. Yeah, holding by the sides, it's like super comfortable.
My thumb wouldn't even really reach.
Okay.
I thought it made sense for like the dual stick type games like Bang.io. But yeah, I thought they were innovating. I mean, in retrospect, it was a very strange controller, but I mean, I don't understand the love for the GameCube controller. It's like the controller that'll never die.
Because, like, there's a usability thing there where, you know, if like you design, if you have to do like applications, where about usability? You know, you want the button that you want people to click to be big and shiny, and the thing you don't want people to click to be small. And that's like the design of the GameCube controller.
I just don't, if people loved it so much, why don't they keep something like that going? I mean, they keep that controller going, but why change?
You know, my problem with the GameCube controller is if you tell me, if I'm holding the controller and you say press the A or B button, I'm fine. If you say press the X or Y button, I can never remember which one of those buttons is X or Y.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So that's a design flaw for sure.
Yeah.
We got like three Mario 64 stories.
Yeah, so apparently for our first one, a Super Mario 64 first-person shooter parody becomes a speed-running sensation. So have you seen any of this?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not true. I looked at a clip.
So yeah, Mario 64, Mario has a gun in this, and yeah, it's a first-person shooter. Very strange, but a very creative port, though. It was just made as a joke, but people really jumped on it and are having a lot of fun with it.
Next one is our friends over at Hard Four Games have a video of Super Mario 64 rendered in SGI. So this must be is this an early version of the game? Like on before it was ported to Super Nintendo, like on SGI Workstation?
So what they did was they took the videos and the promo stuff that was originally released before the Nintendo 64 came out. And then they found, I think they took the, I could be wrong on this part, but like the uncompressed or not scaled down SGI assets and put it in a Mario 64 mod. I could be wrong. They may have just redid them to make it look like, you know, the SGI original renders. But apparently Tony from Hard Four Games says this was the most difficult mod he's ever had to, I guess, install. Do you install a mod? I don't know what verb you use for when you mod your ROM. But he said, you know, he had to go to their Discord and pretty much the people who mod Mario 64 all day long had to help him. That's how difficult it was. But he said it was pretty fun, and the video looks pretty neat. And it also brings in a lot of Mario 64 DS. Like you could play as Luigi, and they added a few other little tweaks to Luigi. Even the pictures in the castle look beautiful. And I don't think it's called the Thwomp. What's the big blocky boss? I forget his name, but
I'm the worst person to ask.
But it has real depth to it. It's not just a square, you know? So yeah, this is a really ambitious mod. And I suggest people to at least watch this video, because Hard Four Games are great guys and make great videos. And this is a really, really good one. And what is our next Mario 64 thing?
I don't know, because I did not add any of these.
Mario 64 introduces the camera as a friend and a foe. So yeah, Mario 64 kind of changed 3D gaming, kind of brought it to the next level. And they wanted to show you that some of your buttons controlled the camera, who is actually a character. And whether you think he's a friend or a foe, if you're working with him or working against him, or vice versa, him working against you. It was a really creative way to start the game and kind of start the 3D generation, you know? Mm-hmm. Nice little write-up in AV Club. And, in emulation news, there's a new Game Boy Advance emulator written in C#. That looks like a little fun project on GitHub.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to pull off. I guess computers are faster now, but getting the right level of performance out of this is going to be hard.
Why do you say that compared to other ones?
Because any code written in C# or Java has to go through a runtime.
So yeah, true.
If you're trying to emulate a system, like generally speed is one of your biggest problems. And I think the best emulators are probably lower level languages.
Yeah. Really cool though. I love that they posted this right to GitHub, and it seems like for an emulator, seems like a pretty simple project to jump into. So yeah, pretty cool. Custom DS emulator adds analog control to Mario 64 DS. The story is exactly what I just said out loud. So,
Something you want.
So yeah, this is in the Desmume. How do you pronounce it? Desmume.
I would have gotten the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Emulator. So. Yeah, I should have put that in the Mario 64 segment, but whatever. And your least favorite story of the week.
Oh yeah, this is from the Millennials Discover Things file. And this is about how Mario and Luigi are twins, a thing that I believe we first knew in 1985.
Yeah, when do you think that became canon?
I think that was canon in the original Mario Brothers.
Really? Do they say, like, I'm going to have to research this one because I don't remember when they first said it. I know it wasn't in 2021, but yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, there's a whole new generation of kids and adults that we were there for all this stuff, but...
yeah, I always thought they were twins. I thought that was the point of Mario Brothers, that they were...
I think I knew they were twins, but I don't remember where or how I knew that. Maybe I just assumed... I don't know. And, another one on ScreenRant.com. We have a lot of ScreenRant news items this week, but Link has never been Zelda's only hero. And this is just a story about how, yeah, Link always has his champions around him, and just a little story about all of them. A little nice...
Yeah, supporting characters in the Zelda series, or at least some of them.
Yeah, pretty cool article. And we have a lot more news items than I remember posting this week. That's why we're kind of powering through them.
Yeah, that's good, because I have nothing to say about the next one either.
What is this one? Oh, yeah. I don't know. The fastest way to...
It's an article by someone who doesn't like Paper Mario.
Well, the fastest way to beat Paper Mario is to turn it off and to play Zelda instead. So...
Yeah. So this is actually like a hacking trick. This is about Hot Swap, about... What, injecting Legend of Zelda into Paper Mario?
Pretty much. So if you... So... which one is this? Is this Ocarina of Time, I think? Yeah. So on the Nintendo 64, Paper Mario does not wipe the RAM when you turn on the Nintendo 64. So if you do something in Ocarina of Time where it fills up the RAM in a certain way... then you have about a second and a half to 2 seconds before to swap the carts before the electricity is all out of the RAM and it's wiped. And at that point, Paper Mario sees that because it didn't wipe it, and it brings you right to the credits. So it's definitely not a official any speed run, but it's still kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like a tech demo. So it's like, hey, I don't want to play Paper Mario. So instead, I'm going to crack the game and swap it with a different one.
Yeah. Apparently, you have to play it for like 54 minutes, though. I think that means play Zelda. So, but it still beat the, still cut it in half, though. I don't know if I posted this or you posted this.
I posted this one, yeah. Yeah, so over on nerdlypleasures.blogspot.com, they have an article about gaming on the TRS-80 Model 1, which seems like a tough thing to game on. I don't think it was a huge gaming system, but this is sort of a tutorial on, like, you know, how to get started and some things that you can play you know, like a lot of early kind of text adventures and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then also like how you actually set up the hardware to be able to do this. Just because I guess apparently it didn't come with a tape drive, or maybe you have to do some special work to get the tape drive working. But there's just a whole bunch of like, you know, technical information about assembling the computer to play games on it.
Yeah, pretty much. If you got a TRS-80 at an estate sale and want to check it out, this is the article that teaches you how. Yeah, that is one thing I do not own.
Yeah, I've used a TRS-80. I don't own one. They're I don't know what they were. Like, I guess I wasn't old enough to really understand what the marketing around them was back in the day, but they never really struck me as computers that were intended for gaming.
I agree.
Like,
yeah,
they did not have a selection anything like the Commodore 64 or Apple II.
Uh-huh. Or even the Atom.
Or even the Atom, yeah. So here's a Raspberry Pi Zero article. This is someone who has put a entire ZX Spectrum emulator on a Raspberry Pi Zero inside of a ZX Spectrum cassette.
Yeah. He had to cut off a few pins to fit it in there.
Yeah. Yeah, but it looks really awesome. Like, I could imagine doing this with, like, a music cassette, you know, and just having, like, an MP3 player built in or something.
Uh-huh.
That'd be pretty slick, too.
Yeah.
I like the little monitor he's got here, too. He's got, like, I don't know what this is. It's like a... Where's that monitor?
I don't...
What is that thing that he has there?
I don't know what that is. It's like a 3-inch monitor inside of a cylindrical thing.
Yeah, he must have built that himself, too.
Yeah, I want to know what that is. That's cool. And strange. And very orange.
And, so, yeah, that's for our European listeners. And FPGA Lynx is coming to Mister. So pretty soon, I guess Analog must be doing FPGA Lynx also, right? For their new system you can't buy that, again, only scalpers are able to buy.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The Game Boy look-alike thing.
Yeah, but here they're doing, links on Mister, and they have a demo video, and it looks all right. Like, Lynx to me is a system that, I mean, it's one of those mixed bag systems. Like, there's some games that are kind of all right, and then a lot of, you know, stuff that just doesn't play well. Just, it's kind of slow or choppy. Well, but getting it off the Lynx screen and onto a big screen automatically makes the game a lot better.
Were there any games that were only on the Lynx? Like, they were never in the arcade? They were just, like, Lynx exclusives?
Yeah.
Because I always thought of the Lynx as, like, a gauntlet machine.
Quiz me on this right now?
No, I'm not. No, no. I was just thinking, though. My thought is that, like, you know, if you have a Mister, are you going to play the arcade gauntlet or the Lynx gauntlet? You know what I mean? So I was just thinking, like, well... There must be some system exclusives, but I never owned a Lynx, so I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a Bill and Ted game that's definitely not an arcade game. I don't recall if that's an exclusive or not. I'm having a hard time because a lot of these, I don't know, a lot of them are ported to other systems, right?
Oh, okay.
I should have just searched for Lynx exclusives. because there's not a lot that strikes me as like, this is like, you can only ever play this on the Lynx, other than some homebrew stuff.
Mm-hmm. And, you can only play it for like 15 minutes before the batteries die anyway.
Yeah. Well, I do have a power brick for my Lynx, so I can play it forever.
Nice.
I think I mentioned that last time, like, on a previous episode, like, Atari knew you weren't going to be taking this Lynx anywhere because the power cord has like a 12-foot long cable.
Yeah, that is convenient, though, that they did that. Like, they know. Because so many other power cords are like 3 feet, 3 foot, you know.
Yeah, no, this is definitely like, you can plug this in the outlet, like behind the couch, and take the Lynx all the way off to the corner of the couch and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think my favorite article of the week is that we're getting a new 90s-style Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game called Shredder's Revenge, made by the guys from Streets of Rage 4, the .emu, I don't know how you pronounce it, guys. Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for this one. I'm going to get this one right away. This looks great. It's pixel graphics. Looks like it's actually a sequel to Turtles in Time. So I just think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's probably one you could hook up on the TV and your kids would probably like your kids don't know who the Turtles are. But I think they would still find the game fun.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really cool that they get Mike Patton from Faith No More to do the theme song. And he did it pretty faithfully.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
They could have got like the original singer from Faith No More if they wanted to go really out there.
That's Courtney Love, isn't it?
No. I think she claimed she was in Faith No More, but the rest of the band has denied that ever was a thing that happened.
Chuck Mowgli?
I don't remember the name of the original Faith No More singer. I bet I could find it on Cameo, though.
I'm Googling. It's Chuck something. I want to say it's Chuck something. Original
singer. I was
trying
to find the cheapest celebrity I could on Cameo.
Chuck Mosley.
Okay. Is he on Cameo?
I don't know what that is. What's Cameo?
You know what Cameo?
Oh, I know what Cameo is. Okay. No, I think he's dead. Okay. I think he died last year.
So anyways, the cheapest celebrity I found was like the guitar player from Warrant.
Nice.
I did not know his name.
How much was he?
I had like 15.
That's great. That is great. I can't believe I forgot what Cameo is. I actually like that service. I've never used it. I just like the idea of it. Because why not?
Yes. And like I said, ironically, Cameo is not on Cameo.
Is there a person that you would be excited to get a Cameo from?
It's hard to say because I think anyone that you'd like to get a Cameo from, you probably will be let down by the quality of the Cameo.
Maybe.
You know, like you're a celebrity that you actually are into, you can do the Cameo, but it's clear like they're just, you know, phoning it in. I mean, they're literally phoning it in, of course.
Yes.
But I mean figuratively phoning it in or drunk or whatever. That's why that's hard because I'm trying to think like who would actually... You know, like, I feel like Mark Hamill would probably take it seriously. You know, like, if he's going to charge someone, like, a couple $100 to do a greeting, he's probably going to do a good job.
Oh, totally, yeah. I know Keith Coogan is all about it, and he really does a good job with it.
Okay.
Kind of as a joke.
Who's your Cameo person here? I'm going to look Mark Hamill, because I think he would take it seriously.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Like, if he did the Joker's voice or something, that would be pretty great. I don't know, I think... George Takei would be pretty good. That'd be a good one. That's the only ones that come to mind right now. But my wife got one from, it was some Gossip Girl or I don't know, one of those 2000 something drama shows on TV that her friend got her as a birthday present, kind of as a joke. But the guy like got out of his guitar and like he sang a song with her name in it and stuff. And I was like, wow, this guy spent some time on this.
Okay.
So, yeah. Some of them take it seriously.
The guy that does, like, all the movie trailers. The movie trailer guy, whatever his name is.
Yes. Or get the movie phone guy.
Yeah, you can get them to do one, too, which I assume is pretty good quality.
Yeah, that is a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, more like, they should get more, like, video. I'm sure all the video game and anime voice actors and actresses are on there already.
Oh, yeah, there's got to, if not, there's a different service that has that, like a Crunchyroll type Cameo. If you want us to do a Cameo...
It's not going to be good.
No, yeah, just splice our voice, do like a deep fake from our voices from this podcast.
How about this, one episode after we're done recording, I'll just do like 5 minutes of me giving out different greetings and congratulations.
I love that. You know what? This is off topic, but it made me remember of something amazing. When Snakes on a Plane came out, or was about to come out, there was a promo where you went to their website, and you picked out of a list of names. You picked from a list of names. They had like 1,000 names, and or maybe 100. I don't know. And you could pick from like 50 to 75 different hobbies people could have. And me and my friends were just sending these to each other, because then you would put your friend's phone number in there, and it would be Samuel L. Jackson calling your friend and saying, you know, hey, Hugh, you know, put down those computers and go see Snakes on a Plane. And it was just awesome. And that was actually mine. Mine was Rob and Put Down Those Computers.
So it's just, they just spliced against Mad Libs, but with pre-cut.
Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah. So he was just in a studio saying like 1,000 names.
Okay.
But you could put any phone number in there you want. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like a good way to harass someone too.
Totally. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was our Snakes on a Plane cameo segment.
Which I've never seen, and in all likelihood, I never will.
There is no reason to. Yeah, that's all.
Well, let me guess. Samuel Jackson's on a plane, and there's some snakes.
Yep.
And eventually, they get rid of the snakes.
That's it. Spoiler.
Okay.
Spoiler. They should really make a sequel and just make it like exactly the same. Like it's his return trip from wherever he was flying to.
Okay.
We have, I wouldn't know if this is a topic. I just feel like it's a question people would ask us, but there's a Gizmodo article called I Miss My First PC. And it's just kind of an homage to this guy's first PC and how during those times you didn't really think about megahertz too much. You really didn't think about hard drive speed and RAM speed and frames per second. You just kind of played your point-and-click adventure on your PC. Now, this is definitely newer than my first PC, but this is like a, it looks like a Gateway 2000 Windows 95 PC. So probably... Yeah,
it depends on your definition of PC. PC typically means IBM-compatible PC. I know nothing's called IBM-compatible anymore. But back in the day, that's what it referred to, right? It referred to an x86 IBM compatible computer. I mean x86, right? Because I guess 8088 would have been considered a PC. Versus Apple versus C64, which are personal computers, right?
I mean, like, exactly, yeah.
But typically the confusing thing is PC meant IBM compatible PC, and then later meant Windows PC.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I always thought it was strange that Macs were not personal computers somehow, even though he invented kind of the personal
computer. I think it's dumb that we still keep that notation around today.
Exactly. It should be Mac and x86 compatible, or I guess it'd be AMD 64 compatible
Windows,
now.
I mean, it's basically because yeah, true. Like, the hardware doesn't matter. Like Mac and Windows. So a Mac computer and a Windows computer are on the same hardware at this point.
True. Yeah. Well, for the next few months, because Mac's going ARM.
You're right. Yeah, right, right. Mac will be on different hardware again at some point, but today it is not. But yeah, I mean, it's more about the operating system that matters now, Mac or OS or Linux or Chromium or whatever, or Chrome OS, sorry.
Yes. Yeah. So what was your first PC?
So going by that definition, because I actually had an Apple for a long time, and then I had an Amiga 500 for a while, which I'd also argue is a personal computer. My first actual personal computer I bought mostly because I was tired of working horrible retail jobs, and I decided I was going to learn programming. So I bought a, at the time, was a Pentium 100. It was not a Gateway. It was from a smaller vendor. Because I don't know if Gateway was making, I don't know if Gateway was a big name at that time. I'm trying to remember when Gateway really became like sort of the de facto maker of computers in the 90s. But it was a Pentium 100 with, you know, kind of bare bone video and audio. Like I could play games on it, but really my goal was to learn how to program. And it had for the time a very large 1.3 gig hard drive.
That is pretty huge.
And that hard drive, I eventually like melted the hard drive down because I'm one of those crazy paranoid people who like when I get rid of a hard drive, I take the platters out and melt them down.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's overkill, but whatever. Even though I did that, I have right now on my hard drive a 1.3 gig file that is just a dump of that hard drive. I don't know why I don't ever delete that.
What's on it?
I don't know. You know, it's old emulators. You know, I'm sure I have, you know, the very first DOS emulators on there. I definitely have like Doom for Windows 95 on there and a bunch of Doom WADs. There's probably some Doom WADs that maybe you can't find on the internet anymore. Who knows? And then whatever programs I wrote in like 1996 to 1999 before I upgraded.
I feel like that belongs. I feel like that hard drive needs to be on archive.org. I feel like Jason Scott needs that hard drive.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I got the problem is I don't know what sort of personal data I still have on it. So it's not very large, but, 1.3 gig is like nothing by today's standards, right?
Oh no, but yeah, I remember my first 1.6 gig hard drive and thinking like, this will never fill up ever.
Right. And then as I started to actually fill that up, I bought a parallel port zip drive to, offset my storage problems.
That was a good purchase. Very good purchase. I'm sorry if I didn't hear you. What was the CPU in your...
It was a Pentium 100.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
That
I
was one...
Like the 486 DX for a little bit less, but I knew that would eventually be obsolete.
Yeah, the 100 just felt so fast, especially with stuff like Doom. It just felt so fast.
It was very fast, yeah. And, you know, I had Netscape 1 or 2 on there. Did have an internal modem, so I did actually splurge a little bit to get the internal modem instead of external modem. But yeah, I mean, I mostly taught myself, you know, C++ and Visual Basic programming on that computer.
Uh-huh.
And now here I am today, doing whatever it is I do with computers.
Well, put those computers down and watch Snakes on a Plane.
Yes, that is what I'm going to do. How about you? What was your first PC here?
So yeah, I won't go into... This isn't my first computer, but for Christmas, my dad traveled a lot. So I think he had a lot of... I don't know if it was credit card points or Marriott points or whatever points, but I think he was able to use them to buy a family computer. And it was a Magnavox Head Start 3D6 SX with 640K. Oh no, it had 1 meg of RAM and a 40 meg hard drive and a 2-speed CD-ROM with the caddy and everything. So that was the big deal with that computer. And it came with, you know, a stupid encyclopedia on CD that didn't really make it that multimedia. You know, if you looked up Abraham Lincoln, it played like a little audio of his speech, his, you know, Gettysburg Address or something like that. I don't know. Maybe if you looked up a lion, it had a lion roar. I don't know. I jumped from my first computer, you know, the first family computer to that one and really dove in. And you know, one of my greatest memories is saving up a ton of money and in one day buying Civilization and Space Quest 4 in the same day and just having like, it was just the best few weeks of my life, really diving into both of those games. And I still wasn't a very good programmer then. I was teaching myself Turbo Pascal 7, I think. And because that's what a lot of bulletin board systems were, and I ran my first bulletin board off that. And eventually needing more space because of that, so I got a hard card, an 80 meg hard card, which was like a PCI hard drive that had, you know, spindle platters and everything in there. Yeah, eventually I got a I was probably such a the most boring son to buy stuff for, but I convinced my dad to get us 4 megabytes of RAM eventually and a math coprocessor for it, the 387 chip, which I don't even know if games actually used it. I don't know if I actually had any benefit from it. But yeah, it was a computer you bought from Sears, I'm pretty sure. Sears or Montgomery Wards. I can't remember where Magnavox was sold. Yeah, I used it for a long time until I saved my money and built myself a 4666. But I think listing all of our previous computers is a totally different episode.
Yeah. Well, the problem is I wouldn't necessarily remember. I mean, I know I upgraded to a newer computer in like maybe 99, because by then Windows 95 was getting kind of old and I was actually not working as like a real programmer and I wanted like a better computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that computer had a, let's see here. I'm going to go with 11 gig hard drive because I have
11.
Also a disk image on my hard drive called 11 gig Windows hard drive.
I don't remember 11 gig drives.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I got an 11 gig drive either. And then my next computer had a 41 gig hard drive. And then after that, I just copied the hard drives are now too big to save as like a single image file.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, they aren't anymore, but like, I don't want to get into like a file system debate here, but now I just, when I buy a new hard drive, I just copy the contents of the hard drive over instead of snapshotting the image.
Yeah. Those were the good old days. Computers were definitely simpler. And now we can have 30 of those running in a virtual machine on our current desktops.
Yeah, I mean, I can boot that old Windows 95 computer.
That's awesome.
On, you know, in virtual machine. Virtual PC, which Microsoft really doesn't make anymore, worked a little bit better, but I think it runs in VirtualBox just fine, too. I don't know what I would do with it. Again, you know, maybe one day I'll write an article where I go through and look at this 20-something-year-old hard drive.
Yeah.
It's likely to mostly just embarrass me, is my guess. I don't know.
You might find some cool programs or something in there. Yeah, the Doom mods are what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Maybe I have a Doom mod that got pulled from the internet because it was, I don't know, someone horrible created it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think why Doom mods would disappear from the internet. I don't really have a good reason.
Well, should we, yeah, this is a quick, fun topic down memory lane. Should we go into some game club?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Mine's listed there first. I guess I'll jump in. I did Road Blasters, and so to preface this game had a beautiful cabinet in the arcade, but I did not play that this time because I was just busy this week. I loaded up my MAME ROM for it, and it just wasn't working right, and I just didn't have time, so I played the Genesis port, which was fantastic. But yeah, this is a 1987 game from Atari Games. US Gold did some ports, and Tengen, I think, did the Genesis port, if I remember right. But you could also get this on Lynx, which I did not play, NES, Amiga, Atari ST, Commodore 64, and the Speccy, and Amstrad. Anyway, I would say this is a... I guess I would say Spy Hunter-like. So you are in this race car that has guns, and there are 50, I don't want to say tracks. Oh, it's 50 rallies is what they call it. And you have to get to each goal line before you run out of fuel. And by getting more fuel, you get either these green orbs or these red orbs. And by get, I mean run into. And your fuel gauge goes up. You actually have two fuel gauges. You have your main tank and your reserve. And yeah, you have a gun on the front of your car and you're shooting all these other cars for, I don't know what the story is. I read some crazy, I don't know if it was lore or from the real manual about what the story of this game is. It's so crazy. I'm not going to talk about it on this podcast. It's almost like,
it's not just like some futuristic death race thing.
No, in fact, it read exactly like a QAnon manifesto. So I'm just I made the editorial decision to just not talk about that.
Do you think maybe that's what the conspiracy is based on? Do you think this whole time it's been someone LARPing Road Blasters?
It might be an ex like Atari programmer or something. But anyway, if you want to find it, I just Googled Road Blasters Genesis Manual. And it was one of the first ones.
I'm going to be reading that right now.
Every once in a while, a jet will fly over you and it throws down an upgrade, whether it's a faster gun, a cannon, or something that makes you drive a bit faster. And the idea is to get to the end of each rally before you run out of fuel. And you run out of fuel by either... Well, just by not getting enough of those fuel orbs. And so you could crash as much as you want, but that takes up your fuel. You know, so you don't want to hit any of those oil slicks or projectiles or anything like that. Yeah, there was an ending in 1987. There was an arcade promo where if you beat all 50 rallies and I guess sent a picture of your name and the score at the end, something like that, Atari would send you a t-shirt, I think. I think it tied into Matchbox somehow. I don't know. But, you could get this game on a few different collections. And like I said, it was ported to a lot of things. And I had fun with this one. It had cool sound. It seemed like a great port. I watched videos of the Atari arcade version of this, the original arcade version. And, the Genesis port was great. Obviously, the sound in the Atari arcade cabinet was a little bit better. In fact, this one has a, what's it called? It's the part of the MAME ROM file, the chunk of data, I think. Anyway, there was a lot of data in there for the audio and stuff like that. But I would definitely give this game a play. It got mixed reviews back in the day. I don't know why. Maybe some of the other ports were just really horrible. The NES port isn't great, but it's still fun. One thing I didn't remember or I guess realize or even think about before doing the bare minimal research we do for this podcast is the villain in Wreck-It Ralph, the game he went turbo from was Road Blasters. And I just never thought about that. I've seen that movie 100 times, so...
But he's not in the game. They just use that game?
Yeah, and that's what got me looking for the manual, to see if there was any reason why they would have picked this game. But, to see if there was any mention about Turbo or King Candy for some reason. But really, really strange. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I'm still trying to find like the real manual. I saw that page that has a text dump of the manual, but that can't be real.
That looked wacko, right? Like a person who's not right in the head wrote that, right?
Right, but it references like events that I'm not sure happened by the time this game came out.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. That has to be fake. That can't be the real manual.
But why for Road Blasters? It makes no sense. Fascinating. Fascinating.
I'm trying to Google image search to find it too. I can find the manual in Japanese, but that's not really super helpful to me here. So I originally played Road Blasters like years and years and years ago because it struck me as being Spy Hunter, but from a different viewpoint. And I liked Spy Hunter a lot. And that's kind of what it is, right? It's a lot, it mechanically is like Spy Hunter, but, you know, first person view. And that's what was fun about it for me. It's a very hard game. I played the NES and the Genesis version. I have the arcade version on one of these collections by me, but I didn't get around to playing the arcade version. The NES version arguably controls better than the Genesis version, but does not look very good.
Like, its sound is bad.
Sound is awful. It's not nearly as good. It doesn't look as good as like Rad Racer, which came out like years before.
You're very correct. Yeah, I'm surprised this made me just think about. I was just thinking about how it sounds like a 7800 game. So why did this not come out for 7800?
The system was dead by then.
True. Right? Yeah.
I was not. I thought it controlled really well, though. Like, the play control is really good. The Genesis version, it's really hard to control. Mm-hmm. It looks great. It looks almost identical to the arcade. Maybe not almost identical, but it looks really good. But the controls take a little bit longer to get the hang of. Like, the stage where, like, motorcycles start appearing, it's really hard to avoid the motorcycles.
It's hard to hit them with the gun, too. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't even trying to shoot them. I was trying not to die the entire time. But it's a good, I mean, it's a good port. Like, I would not have been disappointed, unless this manual was actually the manual.
Yes. Or this game should be banned. But, it's landmines really got me. Those landmines were hard mm-hmm. to see where they were coming from. And, yeah, I would definitely recommend this one though. It is a difficult one. This would have been a fun 32X port for sure.
Yeah, it would have. I'm looking here, like, the Genesis version came out in, like, late 91.
Wow.
So all the ads are in, like, late 91. So that would tell me that it really no shot of it coming out on anything else. And then, like, this crazy manual clearly can't check out. Because if World Blaster was released in 1991, it's, like, referencing events from, like, the Clinton years. So I don't know what this crazy site is that comes up that's like the first search result for Road Blaster's Sega Genesis manual.
Yeah, someone very disturbed wrote that. But I wonder if that site has... I wonder if that's the manual for all games. Like, if you on that site.
Yeah, but I mean, the rest of the description isn't wrong.
Exactly.
The directions part is fine.
Exactly.
But the story of the game is not that option at all. It's just not the game. It's just not the. It's.
Yeah, there's zero chance that's correct.
Yeah. And again, I think it's best we don't read it. that is really messed up.
Yeah. Speaking of messed up, let's go to your game.
Yeah, well, this is a good kind of messed up.
Yes.
So I did Katamari Damacy, and I actually in the past week played Katamari Damacy re-rolled on the PlayStation 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just a really good version of the game. And I hadn't played that one. I have played the original. I played We Heart Katamari. The first Katamari Damacy game I played was actually the PSP one.
That's a great game.
It's very, very good for PSP, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the first one I played, and... definitely enjoyed it enough to go back and get the rest of the series. I think We Heart Katamari is probably my favorite, but Reroll is a pretty good remake. So again, the premise is the story is completely over the top. I don't even know if I could just describe the story. But the premise is you're this little guy with your little magical ball that can roll up anything smaller than the ball. So it's like, you know, go fish. What was the fishing game I'm thinking of? Shark Splash. Wait, no.
Huh?
Shark. That's it. This is an easy name to remember. So you can pick up things, you know, smaller than you, and then your Katamari ball gets larger and larger. And eventually, you know, as the game progresses, you're rolling up like entire cities, right? But each stage is small. Like it progressively takes you to larger parts of the world, right? So the first stage, you have to get like a 10 centimeter ball. And of course, no one here in America knows the metric system. I don't know the metric system. Do you know the metric system?
Yeah, kind of. I lived in Australia for a while, so I got okay. the gist after a while.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, you know, it's all multiples of 10 and that kind of stuff.
But picturing the metric system.
Like,
yeah.
But if you show me like two balls and you say, which one of these is 10 centimeters? And like one's a golf ball. And one is like one of those giant red playground kickballs.
Yeah.
You know, the things that are bigger than your whole body.
Yeah.
And you said, which one of those is 10 centimeters? I just, I don't know. So that's the problem I have.
One did you say is your favorite?
We Heart Katamari.
Okay.
Which is the sequel. Because that starts to introduce endless mode. like levels that don't have time. Like after you beat a level, you can play it without the time limit.
Yeah, that's one thing. Everyone wanted that one. So I played Reroll on the Switch. And everyone wanted the second one on the Switch because that has all the quality of life updates.
Yeah, yeah, because it is an overall better game. Maybe they'll do it. Who knows? I figure if you port one, you can port the other, but maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe people didn't buy enough of them. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that is strange. So I know the guy that made this, I think he retired from Katamari's. He was just done.
Yeah, he wasn't really... The funny thing is, if I remember the story, he wasn't really a game developer.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's right.
He just had this... Which is maybe the best game ideas come from people who aren't, you know, big into games. So yeah, he did a really good... had a really great idea. And then, you know, there's different kinds of challenge stages. You know, get X amount of this type of item, right? And then at the end, you have, you know, this relationship with your very dysfunctional relationship with your father, who's like, you know, king of the universe, who constantly is disappointed in you. I suppose that part's realistic.
It's right? Not a healthy relationship. This game is definitely about daddy issues.
Yes. And we heard Katamari explores it more.
Yes.
You know, so that part's cool. And yeah, so I played a bunch of it. I've not finished Katamari Damacy Reroll just yet. Probably will finish it over the weekend. You know, I try and do a stage a night. I could sit through. I mean, I really could power through the whole game in one night, I think.
It's yeah.
It's like that addictive.
Oh, totally. Yeah. The first time I played this game, I was living in some flats and I actually worked with and was with a buddy with the guy that lived downstairs. And I just texted him like one Friday evening, like, I'm bored. What's up? And he was like, dude, I got this new game. Come down, bring beer. So I went down there and he had an Xbox 360. I've never owned a Microsoft game console. He had an Xbox 360 and he just got Beautiful Katamari, which I have never played since then, but I've been wanting it to be ported everywhere. And because, spoiler alerts, when you get to the end, and to tell me if there's another game that does this, because I'm pretty sure you can't in Reroll, because I tried. The last level, you could get so big that you roll up the whole solar system.
No. So you're just rolling up the entire planet by the end in the other versions.
Yeah, so this one, you could do the whole solar system, and it was so gratifying to finally do. Now, again, they reuse these levels in, like, all the games, maybe?
There's a lot of reuse. I mean, I mentioned playing the PSP game first, and the PSP game is like, you know, a best of, if that makes sense. You know, it's the best levels from the first two games.
Yeah.
And like the best songs from the first two games.
Yeah.
I didn't really talk about the music yet. Like the music in this game is incredible.
Oh, man.
It's just so it's often very silly songs. They're all very well produced. You know, it's like they put so much work into the presentation of this game.
They're so catchy. So catchy. Yeah. They'll be in your head for days. And the Vita one, Touch My Katamari, that's a really good one too.
Yeah, that's kind of my least favorite. It seems like the shortest at least.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And it has that mechanic where you use the back touchpad to squeeze the ball to kind of make it an odd shape to fit through some certain parts, but they didn't really explore that mechanic much. I'm kind of glad they didn't because I don't know if it needed it, but yeah.
I never used it outside of the tutorial level where you have to use it.
And apparently there's some iOS and Android games, but I've never played any of those.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't played those. I know in one of the games, after you defeat it, there is like a 2D version of the game, like a side-scrolling version that you can play during the credits.
That's awesome.
And that's pretty cool. Like, I could see that, you know, being made to Genesis or something and it being fun, but not something I'm really dying to get.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we would both say this is a hard recommend.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. This or any of the later games, they're all great.
Yeah, and I mean, this started on PS2, and it really, I mean, that was really impressive on that hardware. Really impressive. So, yeah, any closing thoughts on any of these games?
No. I mean, I really recommend both of them a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you going to play next?
What am I going to play next? I don't know. You could do your lead-in first, because mine's related.
Okay. I chose Panzer Dragoon because I got it on the Switch, and I never really got to play it when it came out, and it's a super expensive game, so now you could get it for cheap. What do you got?
Since you were talking about I of course was thinking Sega Saturn. I'm going to pick a Sega Saturn game, but it's also a multi-platform game. Mm-hmm. And that is Sega Rally Championship. I don't know why I can't pronounce that. It's on arcade, Saturn, Game Boy Advance, which I'm really curious about now. Mm-hmm. And Nokia N-Gage.
I bet that's great. Too bad it's not on the game.com.
Yeah, too bad.
So, yeah, if any of our listeners play, Road Blasters, Katamari Damacy, Panzer Dragoon, really any, there's like three or four of those games, right? Or Sega Rally Championship, or have any, retro news, anything cool you're doing, you want to tell us about your first PCs, we love to hear from you. That's why we're here, to play the games with you guys. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net, or on Twitter, at RGCPodcast. And Zach takes care of all the socialness for us. He's our social butterfly.
If you have the original Road Blasters for Sega Genesis, if you could scan that manual with the description of the game, the story of the game, I would be really curious to hear that.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yes, absolutely. Please. That's a great one. But, yeah, we got some nice emails here. I'll take this first one. It's about written from Carl. Thanks, Carl. He's talking about his first computer he bought himself in 2001 from a family friend by using some after-school job money. He did a lot of upgrades from some assistance from his scoutmaster who also worked IT. He did IT at Adobe. That's awesome. So yeah, it's a Pentium 2, 333 megahertz, 128 meg RAM, the 4 meg diamond stealth card, which I think everyone building PCs had back then, and the coveted 12 megabyte Voodoo 2 3D accelerator that you needed for Quake and Doom, and a 20 gig hard drive, going big.
Wow. This was a very expensive computer for the time.
Yeah. He looks like those are some good upgrades. And yeah, he played tons of Quake and Unreal, and eventually had to get a second phone line in his bedroom. So he stopped making his family nuts with hogging all the phone time there. And then a friend of his got him into Icewind Dale, which I don't know that one. Have you played that?
It's funny. I own it. It's a PC game. It's based on the same engine as Baldur's Gate.
Okay.
But... is you know what I'm going to say next. I haven't played it.
Yeah. It's on the stack.
It's right there. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. I liked the idea of the setting a lot. Which is why I don't know. I probably picked it up used. I mean, I definitely didn't buy it new because I don't buy a lot of PC games. And at this point, I'll just wait till it's remade on the Switch to play it. Like, I really like Baldur's Gate a lot. Mm-hmm. And I got Baldur's Gate 2 and then never played it. And then they remade it on the Switch. And now I'm like, all right, now I can play Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah. 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 I'm with you on that one, too. I think I got that on a Switch. Oh, I'll look sometime. I'm sure it'll be a Game Club game eventually. But
yeah.
And then he ends it with later that year, he discovered Glide 64 plugin for the Project 64 so he could emulate Nintendo 64 games at almost full speed, and so he played a lot on Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time over Thanksgiving break. Sounds like an awesome time and a great nice. Memory. Yes, I have very similar memories, so I'm with you, Carl.
I skipped ahead. Eric from the Pacific Northwest. He says this is a very long one, but it actually isn't. He says a few shows ago we talked about educational games like Carmen Sandiego. and then asks if we have a favorite educational game.
Do you have one?
It probably is Carmen Sandiego. That's almost certainly my favorite.
I forget if it was a NASA game or what, but there was a collection. It was a collection all in one floppy of, mm-hmm. I forget who it was from, but one of the parts of it was to make the rocket ship fly to the moon, and you just had to compress the gas enough.
Okay.
Like the molecules are bouncing around the screen and you have to catch them all in one spot so there's enough pressure to get it all the way to the moon. I just remember having so much fun with that one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, what do I voluntarily play? Like, what would I actually fire up and play? And Carmen Sandiego and I guess Oregon Trail are the only two that I ever go back to. And Oregon Trail, I kind of don't go back to very often. But Carmen Sandiego, part of it is like just, it's kind of cool to see, like, to see if you can remember countries that don't exist anymore in some cases.
Yes. Yeah.
but honestly, like, you know, they made a North Dakota variant of Carmen Sandiego. I think you could take that game engine, and I know I talked about it like 2 or 3 weeks ago. You could just plug anything into that.
Yeah.
And it would be good. So that one's really good. And he says Word Munchers or Oregon Trail is his favorite. And is curious, we played the modern versions of Oregon Trail, and I have not.
I have the thing you could buy from Target a while ago, but I only played it for a few minutes, and then I got busy, so.
And then he asked about the other Learning Company games, like Treasure Mountain, which was out in the mid-90s. These are games I remember from working in the game store, because we sold all these things, so I did not play them, because I was well past the Target demographic, if you will, for those games. I will say, like, later on when, you know, my kids were old enough to start getting into the computer, I got them a couple what were at the time modern-ish educational games. And most of those are more like interactive fiction games. You know, they're sort of like either they're an interactive storybook or they're, you know, the Putt-Putt games, which are really just like, you know, a LucasArts game, but for children. And the latter ones, the Putt-Putt games, actually seem like really, they're actually good games mechanically.
I don't remember those.
They're super easy. There's no, I mean, anyone can solve the puzzles. Like, there's no, hopefully you can solve all the puzzles. But, I mean, they're meant for, like, five-year-olds, so they're not hard. But they play like a LucasArts game, sort of.
Cool.
And then he also mentions getting GDEMU for the Dreamcast working. He said it was a real pain, but is very nice. And then an estate sale they went to in 2018. Oh, he mentioned that to us in a previous email.
Yeah, he's still looking for those photos.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that GDEMU is great. It's a game changer for the Dreamcast.
Yes.
Cool. I'll grab this next one from Jason from New Zealand. I think this is our first New Zealand email. So hello, Jason. Welcome to the show. He spent an evening with Road Blasters on MAME. It's his first time he played it, and probably because he had an Amiga as a child, and the Amiga port was awful. But the arcade version was very fun, smooth graphics, and he loves the gauntlet-like speech samples. Yes, it is very gauntlet-like. That's very for the time of Atari. Oh, yeah, he mentioned something I forgot to mention, is the multiplier mechanic. So it rewards you for shot accuracy. So how that works is every time the counter starts at 0 and it could go up to 10 as a multiplier. So every time you hit something without missing, the multiplier goes up one. But every time you miss, it goes down one. So by the time you get to the end of the rally, you want to have hit 10 things in a row.
Okay.
Pretty interesting. And I didn't know that till very recently, so I was just holding down holding on fire the whole time. But yeah, he could pretty much get to stage 5, but not really past that. But he says he would return to it, so that's awesome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope you play the other games we suggest, and I hope you email us more. Thanks so much, Jason, Eric, and Carl, for those emails.
Yeah, thank you. And what's the email address again?
It is email at retrogameclub.net. And email is retro. That's why we use it. And also, But Zach is on social media. What did he post here? It's 2001. You spec'd out your gaming rig. What are you playing it on? Or what are you playing on it?
Yes.
So what do we got here? Jim from the Pie Factory, another great podcast, played some Katamari that he got at sale on GOG or Humble Bundle. And he never owned it on PS2, but still wanted to play it. What else do we have here?
A few people trying Katamari for the first time. Some again, love for We Love Katamari. And then someone shared a little article with us. We put this on the show notes for next episode. Do you want to talk about this next episode?
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah. So, I mean, we could talk. We can mention it now, but what is this? Reverse engineering NES Tetris to add a hard drop. So, French Pet sent that to us. Yeah. So, that might be either at least a story, but hey, that might be a good topic.
Let's make it work like the Nintendo version work sort of like the Tengen version.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, cool. All right. I think that wraps up, what was that, episode 82?
Could be, yeah.
Who knows? Episode 5000.
Yeah, I think it's episode 82. That sounds right. Yes, episode 82. Sorry.
Cool. All right. And remember,
scroll back up to the top of the show notes to get the episode number.
And remember, if you have a scan of Road Blasters for Genesis Manual, we need it.
In English.
Yeah, in English.
Yes.
Unless you speak Japanese and you could tell us what it means.
What it says, yeah. And don't Google this manual.
No, you will go down probably a QAnon rabbit hole and you might not come out.
Yes. That was one of the strangest things I've ever read.
Yeah. So I guess let's just end it on that really awkward note.
All right. So thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.